We're just about halfway through this journey we've been on the last few weeks of trying to understand what the Messianic era is going to look like, what Yemos HaMashiach is going to be. And so we've gone into it in some fairly good depth. And I think what's been happening is that each week that we delve into a topic, the trend has been is that we've come across a topic that needs more examination. So this is another good example of that, where we had brought up tangentially last week in the discussion we were having about, will there be any changes to nature? Like, will the world be like a very different world in the Messianic era, or is it going to be basically the same kind of existence that we've had thus far, just with more clarity? Like, that's what we saw from the Rambam. And then we saw from the Rambam that, like, things are going to be very different, it seems like, right? Like, when the Navi says that the wolf will lie with the lamb, that's supposed to be taken literally. That the Rambam also mentioned that when the Torah says that all the wild animals are going to leave the land of Israel, the Rambam takes that literally and says that all inhabited lands are going to be taken over by the Jewish people in the land of Israel, and therefore all the animals are going to have to go somewhere else. Now, that is totally a break in nature. The Rambam doesn't seem to assume that way. In fact, the Rambam says that really the only practical difference is that the Jewish people are no longer going to be subjugated by other governments. We are going to govern ourselves according to the Torah in the land of Israel, and the rest of the world is going to see the Torah as the governing property, and that God is one and there's no other. That is what the world is going to be like. All of these supernatural changes are not going to take place in Maimonidean view. However, the Ramban is taking the approach that they do. So we came across in that topic, a subtopic of that, of the Yetzer Hara, where we know we have pulls to do naturally to do the right thing or the wrong thing. In fact, just by reading Parshas Noach, it sounds like our default is to do the wrong thing. Torah says, "Ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra minu rav," that a man from their birth has the nature to do evil, to do the wrong thing. We do have natural pulls to do the wrong thing. We also have natural pulls to do the right thing. And that our free will lies in the point of tension. We spoke about it, if you recall, the sessions we went through on free will. The tension lies in the place where I have to make a choice, right? Where it's not that it's just so simple and part of my nature at this point to do the right thing, or even the wrong thing in the other regard, where it's too difficult for me not to do the wrong thing. But the point of tension lies, where the point of tension is, where I could go either way, that's when I can express my free will. That's what the Rav Dessler had explained it that way. But will we have a Yetzer Hara in Yemos HaMashiach? Will we have any inclination of doing the wrong thing? Will there be an innate desire within us to go after lust, to go after money, to go just for the sake of money, for materialism, for lashon hara, for so many different things that we encounter on a regular basis that we know are negative? Are we still going to be? Will there be anybody eating non-kosher in Yemos HaMashiach during the Messianic era? Will that be an issue? Will there be Jews eating non-kosher Shabbos? Will there be such a thing as an unaffiliated Jew or a non-observant Jew? What is the story with the Yetzer Hara come Yemos HaMashiach? So the Gemara already deals with this in a couple of different places. A Gemara in Masechta Sota and a Gemara in Masechta Shabbos deal with this head on. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Sukkah where the Gemara is discussing a passage in the Navi Zechariah. The Navi Zechariah is describing how during the Messianic era, there's going to be some eulogy, some great eulogy that's given during the Messianic era. And the Gemara has two opinions as to what this eulogy is for. One opinion, probably the more common opinion that is discussed, is that of the death of Mashiach ben Yosef, where Mashiach ben Yosef is going to herald the Mashiach's arrival, where he is going to be the sacrifice before Mashiach ben David. Where the Mashiach from the lineage of David HaMelech comes, it's very possible that Mashiach ben Yosef has already come. It's very possible that that's already happened. We don't know exactly what the timeline is going to look like, but this is the Mashiach ben Yosef, and then there's going to be this great mourning that takes place after the death of Mashiach ben Yosef, says the Gemara, but there's another potential mourning that we're going to be going through when Mashiach comes, says the Gemara. Chad Amar al Yetzer Hara Shenarag, that we're going to mourn the death of the Yetzer Hara, that God is going to kill the Yetzer Hara upon Mashiach's arrival, and we are going to mourn Mashiach's coming. Now, says the Gemara, Bishlama, it makes sense that there's going to be a mourning period, the Manda Amar al Mashiach ben Yosef. When Mashiach ben Yosef dies, it makes sense that we're going to mourn. Elo amanda amar al yetzer hara shenarag. But if you assume that we're mourning over the demise of the yetzer hara, hai hespeda by the mevad, we should be mourning. Simcha by the mevad, we should be cheering. We should be celebrating. We have no more desire to do the wrong thing. That's a wonderful. Isn't that wonderful? Why aren't we celebrating? So says the Gemara. Amai Bahu, then why are we crying? Why is the Navi Zechariah describing? If what we're crying over is the fact that there's no more Yetzihara, why are we crying? So the Gemara actually goes on to explain something absolutely amazing. The Gemara says, and it paints a picture, that when Mashiach comes, Hashem is going to show the world what the Yetzihara was like, what the Yetzirah was like. And there's going to be two perceptions of this display that God is going to make. Over this presentation that God gives over the Yetzirah, there's going to end up being two different perspectives, two different ways of viewing this presentation that God is giving. Says the Gemara, Kedarsh Rabbi Yehuda, La'asid Lavo, that when Mashiach comes, God is going to bring everyone in front of the Yetzer Hara, v'shochto, and God is going to slaughter it in front of us, mipnei hatzadikim u'mipnei harishayim, in front of both the righteous and the wicked. Tzadikim, the righteous are going to see this, and it's going to be nidma lahem. It's going to appear to them, Gehar Gavoa, that God is taking this huge mountain and crushing it, this massive mountain and crushing it. The Rishayim, and the Rishayim are Nidma Lahem Kechut Hasara, that the wicked are going to see God holding the Yetzahara as this thin little strand of hair that God is just going to pluck. And that the Tzadikim are viewing this performance of God is taking this massive mountain and crushing it, and that the Rishayim, they're watching this at the same moment, and they're seeing God take the Yetzer Hara, which is in their view, which is just a hair string, and they're going to break it. What does this mean? Continues the Gemara, and it says, Halalu Bochim, v'halalu Bochim, and both the Tzadikim are going to be crying, and the Rishayim are going to be crying. Tzadikim bochen, the tzadikim are going to be crying when they see God crush this mountain. That's the Yetzer Hara. They're going to be crying ve'omrim, because they're going to be saying to themselves, Hech yecholnu lichbosh har gavoa kazeh, that in our lifetime, the amount of times we've climbed that mountain, it just is going to bring up all of these emotions. It's almost like they're going to be reliving the trauma of every time they had to conquer their Yetzirah.
I thought the tzaddikim didn't have to. Aren't they the ones that don't have to conquer it?
Of course, tzaddikim conquer the Yetzirah all the time.
Don't they sort of have that, but it's hardly any effort because they're in a certain plane?
So that's a big misconception. That as they climb those ladders, now the giving into the Yetzirah becomes so much easier because your Yetzirah just expanded because there's so many more things you're tempted with. Meaning to say that, as we mentioned from Rav Dessler, when that a person expresses their free choice when they're at the point of tension.
Now, tension is very hard. You're thinking
exactly. So there's so many more things that they are expected to turn away from.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's why it's like this huge mountain for them, right? So now, when they're watching God go do this, destroy the Yetzirah, they're like reliving the trauma of having every time that they had to conquer the Yetzirah, of conquer that evil pull that they had to do the wrong thing. And they beat it each time. It's a challenge every time that you stand up and say, no, I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara. No, I'm not going to do X, Y, or Z. I'm going to conquer that natural pull. I'm going to stand up and rise against it, even though it's so difficult. It's so difficult not to. I know of somebody who was that if they're at a Shabbos table and there's Lashon Hara going on, I know someone that actually gets up and excuses themselves from the table because they know that they're gonna add to the gossip, and they can't be challenged with it. If they sit there, it's gonna be too difficult for them. They get up and they excuse themselves. You know how difficult that must be for them to get up and excuse yourself from like a Shabbos table. What are people going to say about me now? Right? They're already talking Lashon Hara. What are they going to say about me now? Right?
In a sense, it's difficult to get up and leave. But in a sense, it's like it's like not being up to the challenge of being able to just associate oneself from it.
Right.
What's going on around.
But that we're also not supposed to put ourselves in situations that we're going to be challenged. So when we actually conquer the Yetzirah, mamish, it feels like climbing a mountain. Now, what about for the Rishayim? Rishayim Bochim, the Rishayim are going to be crying because the Omrim, they're going to say to themselves, Hech lo yecholnu lichbo hachut hasara hazeh. It's all it was just a hair. That's all. All we had to climb over was just a hair. It should have been so easy for us. And they're crying over the fact that they didn't conquer the Yetzirah in their lifetime, and that's what they're going to be crying about. Or in the time before Mashiach's arrival. That's what they're going to be crying over. Now, for Rishayim,
their level
is so low. Just take one step. We couldn't even take that step, right? It's almost like, it's like embarrassing. It's like, couldn't even take that step. Now for tzaddikim, it's like, I mean, for them, it was that they were reliving some. It's almost like, so it's similar. I don't know if you, almost like you can call it like tears of joy even maybe. Like they were expressing the fact that like, wow, I can't believe we did this. We actually did it. We made it to Yemos HaMashiach, having climbed the mountain. And Rishayim were like, we couldn't even step over the hill. Couldn't even step over the hair. Now, back to our discussion. This Gemara, what does it sound like? Pretty explicit to say that Yetzirah is not going to exist during the Messianic era, right? Yetzirah is going to be not just not existent, it's going to be destroyed. God is going to destroy it during the Messianic era. So right away, we're already given sources in Chazal, in the Gemara, to tell me that there's not going to be a Zahara during the Yemos HaMashiach. This is also reflected in Gemara and Shabbos on Daf Kufnun Aleph. The Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, Tani Reb Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Reb Shimon ben Elazar says that Yemea Mashiach, that during the Messianic era, Ein Behem Loz Chutz V'lo Chova, people are not going to be rewarded for doing the right thing, and they're not going to be punished for doing the wrong thing. Again, let's read into this a little bit. Why does somebody get rewarded for doing the right thing? Because they exercised their free will to make the right choice. They get punished for doing the wrong thing because they did not exercise their free choice. Rather, they gave in to their Yetzer Hara, right? So you're not going to get rewarded for doing the right thing because making the right choice is going to be so easy. It's going to be so obvious. Why is it going to be so easy? Because I don't have a Yetzer Hara. Why am I not going to be punished for doing why am I not going to be punished? Because presumably no one's doing the wrong thing. Because there's no Yetzer Hara, right? So, and the Gemara says, but this argues, we plead Shmuel. This argues on Shmuel. The Amar Shmuel, that Shmuel says, Ein bein olam azeli mosa mashiach. The only difference between the reality we're living in right now and the Messianic era is Elashib and Malchus Bovad, is only the government that we're going to be bound by. The government we're going to be bound by is the Torah during the Messianic era. Everything else is going to be exactly the same. The Gemara says, in Shmuel's worldview, the Yetzer Hara is still going to exist in the Messianic era. That's like the Rambam, right? The Rambam himself writes explicitly just like Shmuel. The Rambam is taking the approach, Maimonides takes the approach, that there will be a Yetzer Hara in Yemos HaMashiach. We're going to have to get back to what exactly is that going to look like. But what we have thus far are two fairly explicit Gemaras, or at least opinions found within the Tanaim, that tell me, Tanaim and Amoraim, that tell me that there will not be a Yetzer Hara. We will not have a pull to do the wrong thing during Yemos HaMashiach. And by the way, the practical implication of that, says the Gemara in Shabbos, is that we're not going to be rewarded for doing the right thing, or punished for doing the wrong thing during the Messianic era.
So Shmuel usually had the contrary
opinion. Yeah, Shmuel's having the contrary opinion. He's like, and that's what the Rambam adopted. That's what the Rambam adopted. And it's very interesting. Another practical implication of this, fascinating, is a Tosfos in Masechta Zvachim. Tosfos in Masechta Zvachim on Mem Hei. The Gemara has a terminology called Hilchas Al Mashicha. There are certain halachas that are going to be revisited in the Messianic era, meaning this is Hilchasa. This is the way the halacha is going to be when Mashiach comes. Now, when Mashiach comes, what's going to happen? We had learned that part of what's going to happen is that the Beis HaMikdash is going to come. The Rambam says it's going to be rebuilt. Rashi, we didn't really discuss Rashi. Rashi's opinion is that the Beis HaMikdash is going to come down from Shemaim in its full form. Two opinions about how exactly it's going to happen. But what's going to happen is that there's going to be resumed to temple service. So the other half of the 613 mitzvot that have been sitting dormant, not being practiced, are going to be reserviced, and we're going to be able to resume temple service again and fulfill, you know, those hundreds of mitzvot having to do with the Beis HaMikdash and having to do with the Jewish people having sovereignty in the land of Israel and the like. There is, though, Tosos quotes an opinion of Rabbeinu Chaim. Rabbeinu Chaim is quoted every so often in Tosos, so he always has a very unique opinions, where Rabbeinu Chaim has an opinion over here in Masechta Zvachim on Memhei, where he says that the Gemara very often will go out of its way to tell us what the bottom line halacha is, right? Most of the time, the Gemara will make it clear that, okay, there's multiple views on this matter, and this is the halacha. And the Gemara will use the terminology of hilchasa. Halacha follows the following. Or there's other rules, other principles to figure out what the halacha is in certain scenarios. And there have been svarim written by the Rishonim that that capture what the Gemara's bottom line halacha is. Svarim like the Rambam, the Rif, the Rush, the Mordechai. Svarim from the great Rishonim, from the as early as the Rif in the 11th century, all the way through the 12th, 13th, and even 14th century, strictly on the Gemara, telling me this is the Gemara, it's a summary of the Gemara, and this is how the halacha concludes. Says Rabbeinu Chaim, our concern about what the conclusion of the halacha is are only halachos that we either still practice today, meaning in a post-Beis HaMikdash world, and those halachos that we will revisit and will resume when Mashiach comes and the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. What halachas will no longer be observed anymore, says Rabbeinu Chaim? A few. There are some halachas that will no longer be observed, that are not observed in our day and won't be observed even after Mashiach comes. For example, I saw Stuart smiling. For example, would be capital punishment. Capital punishment, says Reb Chaim, Bali Atosos, is going to cease to exist. Meaning, that's not going to be a function of Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, Beis HaMikdash. No longer is there going to be a death penalty. Why is there not going to be a death penalty? Explains the Masoras HaShas. The Masoras HaShas explains, he says, Da'az, because at that point, once Mashiach comes, Yehuyu Kulam Tzadikim, we're all going to be righteous. Bezin's not going to have to punish anybody anymore. Which, if you take Reb Chaim further, so many Karban Chatos are not going to be brought anymore. I mean, a challenge you could have on Rabbeinu Chaim is that, what do you mean? That does that mean that there's not going to be Yom Kippur anymore? That's not true. We know that's not the case. There isn't going to be Yom Kippur anymore. Like, I mean, we conclude every Yom Kippur by saying what? L'shana Habah B'Yerushalayim, right? I mean, we know that's not the case. So Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen definitely needs more analysis over here. Exactly what does he mean? But let's at least leave it at like capital punishment. Just not going to be an issue anymore. It's not going to be an issue anymore because presumably there's no Yetzihara. People are not inclined to do the wrong thing.
But that's one of the ones that's in effect now. You said you would eliminate all that we would not be, that we would, we should only be concerned with the ones that we use now.
Now?
But there's a conflict. Because capital punishment at the time is what still existed.
No. No, this is in Bali Atosfos. This is in the Tosafos, you know, like in the 12th century. 12th, 13th century France, Germany. There's no capital punishment that Bezin's giving them. No. Capital punishment stopped once the Sanhedrin ceased to exist. Right. No Sanhedrin. Yeah. That's an amazing comment that that Rabbeinu Chaim is making in this Tosos, that there's not going to be a need for capital punishment anymore.
Well, how about punishment? I mean, aside from capital punishment, did they have Beit Dins could punish people for stealing?
No. So there are some punishments that are given even for things that are done unintentionally. There are some, so. I guess unintentional things still could happen, right? Unintentional things could still happen. But intentional things that would require somebody, the only way Beis Din was going to kill somebody is if they were warned not to do what they were going to do. And they said, I am well aware of what I'm doing, and I know it's the wrong thing to do, and I'm going to do it anyway. And there were two witnesses on the matter, and then it's you're really brazenly acting up against God in a public manner in front of witnesses, and you were warned, that's not going to exist anymore because no more Yetzihara. Now, Tosos in Yoma, Masechta Yoma on Daf Yud Gimel, argues on this Tosos. He has a difference of opinion and says, it's not that there's not going to be a Yetzihara, it's just not going to be as prevalent anymore. It's not going to be as common anymore. It doesn't mean there isn't going to be a Yetzirah anymore. It's just that it's going to be much less common for us to encounter people acting up against God. Now, the Ramban, and this is what we had mentioned last time in a kind of just we had touched on this last time, so we need to see this in a little bit more depth, is the Ramban explains this approach, the approach of that there's not going to be Yetzer Hara anymore. So if that's the case, what is the existence we're going to, what kind of existence are we going to have? The Rambam, as we mentioned, it's a much more rational approach, much easier for us to understand. It's regular life with just intense clarity of what's right and wrong. Doesn't mean that we're not going to be pulled to do the wrong thing. It's just going to be much easier to not do it because we really know what the right thing is. And it's so blatantly obvious, all of the benefits of doing the right thing. The Ramban, though, it says, is again, he took this approach of that he took all the psukim in the Torah and the Navi literally, and that there's going to be these major changes. Among them, we're not going to have a Yetzirah. The Ramban writes, Nachmanides, 1194 to 1270, among the greatest of Jewish philosophers, he says, Kimizman ha-briya, that from the time of creation, chayse reshus biyad adam la'asos kritzono, that a person has free choice to do what they want to do. Tzaddik or Rasha, choose to be righteous or wicked. It's the choice we have. Aval, he says, however, v'yemos ha-mashiach, in the days of the Messianic era, tiha b'chira b'tov lahem teva, our option of doing the right thing is going to be our natural state of being. That's going to be our natural state of being, is tov, is just doing good. Lo yis'ava lahem alev, we're not going to have desires of the heart, quote unquote. L'masha eino roi v'lo yichapetz bo klal, of things that are not befitting of us, things that our soul does not truly desire, we're not going to desire it at all. Not going to be even on the table for us. He says, v'yashuv ha'adam, and rather a person is going to revert back, mankind is going to revert back, bizman hahu, to the time and place that what? L'asher haya kodem cheto shel Adam Arishon, before the first sin.
Right.
We're reverting back to that reality. Because that's essentially what he's describing, right?
Yeah, except that Adam Arishon must have had some.
Oh, okay, okay. So we'll have to get to that. He himself says, look at what I said in Bereshis. We'll say it outside. We're going to revert back to the reality of what it was like for Adam and Chava. Shahaya osa betivo. All he did was what his natural state, which was to do only good. Ma shiroi lasos, only that which was the right thing to do. V'lo hayelo bertzono davar, and there was nothing, no other will or desire for Adam Harishon. Ah, yes, Nora. So then why did he eat from the tree? So if you recall back, I don't even know when we did the series on free will. I guess we're talking about a year ago, probably. So if you look back a year ago on the Yadat Yisharon YouTube website, you'll find that the Ramban explains, and in fact, he writes over here, Kamoshi Pirashti Beseder Bereshis. Go look at what I wrote in Parshas Bereshis to understand more fully, that there the Ramban presents that Adam and Chava only received the Yetzirah after eating from the Yetzadas. Iceland, what was the pull even to eat from the Yetzadas? So there's a couple of different perspectives. One perspective, I'm trying to remember if this is the Ramban himself that writes this, or if this is the Rambam, or I'm going to present both, but one is the Rambam, one's the Ramban. I'm just forgetting who said which. One is from the Ramban, where he says that Adam and Chava made a choice to want to live in a world where they can get schar, where they can get reward, meaning they thought the right thing to do would be to give an option of growth potential within man. That was what they decided. That was a decision they made. So it wasn't that they decided to eat from the Eitz HaDaas because of a passion of desire. It wasn't that it was just delicious looking food that they just needed to have and that they were told they couldn't. So therefore they just, I have to just have this. That's not what it was. It was a conscious decision that they made that this is going to be the best thing for man to have higher levels of potential that they can reach, being that they are going to now have a Yetzer Hara. So it's like a conscious decision they made to do it.
But they were told by God not to do it.
And then the snake convinced them otherwise, meaning the snake made a better argument than God.
So it was all rational.
Yeah, completely rational. Completely rational. As opposed to then after the sin, where they realized that they had made a mistake, right? Because then they realized their nakedness and they realized they made a mistake. And that's what, forgetting if it's the Ramban himself that gives this explanation, but the Gemara and Erevin has a discussion about, was it better for man to have been created or not? Well, that's a ridiculous discussion, right? What do you mean? God decided to create man. Of course, it's better for man to be created. The Gemara is really discussing is, was this the right decision Adam and Chava made? The Gemara concludes and says, no, it was not the right decision. But once they made the decision, we have to make the best of it. But even the Gemara is having a discussion. It was a debate in the Talmudic halls about whether or not this was the right call that Adam and Chava made. The second approach is, again, I forget if this is the Rambam or the Ramban, but this is the other approach. But another approach is that that the decision to eat from the decision to eat from the Eitz HaDaas was a desire to be more godlike, meaning not to, again, because this is just dealing with the issue of that, what did they must have had a Yetzer Hara if they did the wrong thing? No, they didn't have a Yetzer Hara. It was actually born completely from a Yetzer Tov. They wanted to come closer to God. God said, don't eat from the Eitz HaDaas, but God gave a reason. God's reason was because when you eat from the Eitz HaDaas, you're going to understand more. Mm-hmm. That Adam and Chava, well, that sounds like a good reason to eat from the Eitz HaDaas. So that's why they ate from the Eitz HaDaas, so that they can come closer to God. But regardless, what the Ramban, back to our discussion, what the Ramban is saying is that that's the reality that the world is going to live in. We're going to live once again as basically as if we're in the Garden of Eden. We're going to be living once again with this, or at least on a spiritual level, not challenged at all from Yetzer Hara. We're reverting back to living a life where it's completely black and white. What's right and wrong? Completely black and white. What's right and wrong? As we mentioned, the Rambam does not take this approach. We've gone through the Rambam a number of different times and spent a great depth going through all the opinion, the entire opinion of the Rambam. What I brought as a handout over here is a copy from, as I mentioned, these classes are by and large, mostly with a little bit of a poetic license on my end and also just adding in a few sources of my own. But mostly 80% of the discussions we've been having are based off of lectures I had heard from Rabbi Netanel Wiederblank Shlita. He's a Rebbe at Yeshiva University, and he gives a year-long class on that meets once a week, going through these topics to first-year smicha students. So these discussions we've been having for the last year or so have been patterning or pattern after the lectures he gave my first year of Smicha. He, a couple years ago, took all of those lectures, refined them, and put them into a book. So he has on page 545 of the second volume of his book, which I believe is called Illuminating Jewish Thought. Highly, highly, highly recommend. I recommend it to a few people in the shul who are very happy with the book recommendation. It is incredible what he put together. What I like to say is Illuminating Jewish Thought.
Can I spell his name again?
Weiderblink.
W-E-I-D-E-R.
I believe. Yes, I believe so, yeah. Natanel. Natanel. Yeah. What he essentially did, which next time I see him, I have to tell him that this is the way I talked about his book. I have to see if he's okay with it. What he essentially did is that he created a Beis Yosef for concepts of Jewish thought. The Beis Yosef, as we mentioned in the past, written by Rabbi Yosef Taro, was the Encyclopedia of Jewish Law, where he basically took every practical halacha and broke it down to its original source and how it developed in the halacha, where Rabbi Weiderblink does the same thing with these major questions of Jewish thought, of things like, what does the Messianic era look like? Well, let's go back to the original sources, and breaks down every single topic and subtopic in such an organized and clear way. It's mamish. It's like a Beis Yosef for topics of Jewish thought and philosophy. An incredible treasure for Klal Yisrael that he made. So he has over here just this beautiful short summary I just wanted to bring, now that we're coming to the end of this this subtopic of essentially like what will the Messianic era look like. He has what will be the differences between the Messianic era and the current reality we find ourselves in, where he has this short summary describing the differences between the Rambam and the Ramban, which is a good way of going about this topic. Like we did, we presented first the Rambam's opinion a couple weeks ago, and these last couple of weeks we've been presenting the Ramban's opinion about the differences that may end up existing. So he writes, he says on page 545, line number one, he says, let us summarize the respective opinions of Rambam and Ramban. For Rambam, the Messianic era essentially is a continuation of this world. Thus, it seems reasonable that nature will not change. If nature were to change, line four, this would indicate a flaw. Certainly, remember we mentioned that, certainly Bechira will not dissipate. Bechira, free will, will not dissipate. On the contrary, the purpose of the Messianic era is to facilitate spiritual perfection, right? We'll have clarity to choose to do the right thing over and over and over again, right? That means that there has to be another option still. To facilitate spiritual perfection, line six, and thereby earn Olam Haba, right? To gain our spot, we'll have to talk more about Olam Haba when we get to that series, but to earn our spot in Olam Haba in the world to come, something possible only with free will. Second paragraph, line eight, Ramban disagrees on both counts. The Messianic era reflects a new stage of history. Change does not indicate a flaw, since the original setup was perfectly suited for this first stage in history, right? Remember, we mentioned that from the Ramban. This is not going to suggest that all these changes are going to be made. It doesn't suggest that there was a mistake. That's the way that Adam and Chava lived in the garden was in peace with the animals, right? That's not an issue that we're not going to be attacked by animals, right? That didn't exist then, right? We didn't have a Yitzhahara then, right? That's just the way that it was. And that was, you could say, you know, on some level, it's the way it was supposed to be, right? The change happened after that. Now we're just reverting back. So it's not a new reality. The end of line 10. In the next stage, the Messianic era, a new system is warranted to support a new goal. Line 12. Moreover, the changes may reflect a return to the original order. In terms of free will, the nature of Bechira will be radically altered, such that doing good will become natural. This will indeed preclude, line 15, the possibility of earning Olam Haba based on the actions done during this period. That at that point, no one will be able to attain a higher level of Olam Haba than they had already deserved at that point, because it's already too late at that point to get more reward. Its purpose then, line 16, its purpose then is not to facilitate this, spiritual perfection and thereby earn Olam Haba, but rather to prepare the world, body, and soul for Olam Haba, which is very mystical and beyond my capacity to be able to rationalize and explain very well. But that is what the Messianic era is going to be like. It's going to be like the second stage before we get to live an eternal life in Olam Haba, which, again, we'll have to get back to in more depth when we talk about what Olam Haba is. It's Olam Haba. Heaven is Olam Haba, the world that exists after the Messianic era. It seems to be like the Ramban approach. That's something we're going to have to get back to. So turn over the page, 546. He says, with this in mind, we can now suggest how Rambam and Ramban might respond to each other's challenges. See how clear he is on everything. It's amazing. It's an incredible book that he put together. Line 3, one can reject Ramban's theory on free will during the Messianic era for two reasons. Number one, meaning, what's the Ramban's perspective on free will during the Messianic era? That it's not going to exist. Now, how are we going to reject that? Number one, Rambam's position that there can be no change in the laws of nature, even during the Messianic era, meaning, why would things change, right? God created a perfect world. This is part of the world that he created. Why would that go away? Number two, in the Messianic era, our actions will allow us to earn Olam Haba. That why the Rambam is saying that that's part of our fundamentals of religion. Right, part of our fundamentals of religion is schar ve'onesh, is reward and punishment. That's just going to fall away, right? Free will is just going to fall away. These are basic tenets of Judaism. Then what's Judaism then at that point? Right, that the wise men longed for Mashiach in order to pursue wisdom, the Rambam says. In fact, the Rambam writes, the wise men longed for Mashiach in order to pursue wisdom and thereby merit Olam Haba. Free will is the prerequisite to earning Olam Haba. You can't get rewarded if you don't have a push to do the opposite. Now, how is the Ramban going to respond back on those two accounts? Line 12. Losing free will is not a change in the natural order, but rather a restoration of our original state that existed in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Chava. Moreover, if our lack of free will stems from clarity of the truth, it need not be seen as a change in nature. Meaning the Ramban is saying that I'm not that different than you, Rambam. That you, Rambam, are saying that, you know, because of the fact that you can't have this change of nature, of course there still needs to be free will. And that what we're going to have in the Messianic era is just this intense clarity of what's the right thing or the wrong thing to do. Says the Ramban, that's essentially the same thing. It's essentially the same thing. I'm just saying it in absolute terms. In an absolute term, that clarity is going to essentially result in the fact that it's as if we don't have a free will. As if we don't have a free will. Basically, as if we don't have a free will. It's as if we don't have a Yetzirah. Number two, line 16. Ramban writes that because there's no struggle with sin, one no longer will earn Olam Haba through his actions. As Rosh Hashanah says, that's what we said, we learned that Gemara before. These will be days in which there is no merit. Won't be able to be rewarded anymore for the good things that we do. So we have these two approaches, Rambam and Ramban. Again, we have to daven. It's funny. Recently, I found myself that during my davening, when I'm davening for Mashiach's arrival, I've recently been thinking that I really want Mashiach to come. Aside from the obvious reasons that we spelled out from the Rambam about the clarity we're going to receive and that we're going to have a restoration of nationality upon the land of Israel and sovereignty and not to deal with anti-Semitism, all those great things. I've been adding to my list, and I can't wait to see who was right in all of these discussions. It's going to be amazing to watch. I'm really looking forward to see exactly what comes out. You know what? The coolest thing, though, is that whatever comes out, it's going to make such perfect sense. Right? That's the coolest thing. It's that there's going to be zero disappointment about what the end result's going to be. The end result's going to be perfect. It's just I'm really curious who ends up who wins the debate. All right.
I have a question. Has the preponderance of Jewish thinkers come out on one side or the other?
I don't know. I think that that the way that at least in the classical yeshivas, the way that these topics are studied are through both approaches. If anything, there's more of a leaning towards the Ramban, but both approaches are studied. But I think in the world of general philosophy, and I guess you can include in there Jewish philosophical thinkers, you know, that have more of a secular bend to them, I think that they're that more of them present the Rambam than do the Ramban, which makes sense just because it's more rational and easier to get your head around.
Right. Yeah.
All right. It's good. Thanks. Ashkelon, everybody. All right. See you next week. Just a housekeeping note. Next week we're on. The following week I'm out of town. Yeah. So this coming week we're still going to be on, but then the week after I'm going to be out of town. Yeah.
You want these back?
No. Yeah. Feel free to keep them. Yeah. All right. Good night, everybody. Nice. Yeah.